Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Gnostic Media's podcast episode number, Unspun episode number 96. I'm your host, Jan Ervin. Today, I'm with Alana Freeland. Alana, welcome. I'm happy to have you here.
Happy to finally arrive on your show.
You know, you had sent me a copy of your book about a year ago, or you had your publisher send it, and apparently this is, you've just put out a new book, so this is like the prelude book, and I still don't have the meat yet. But so you've got a lot of research on, well, we're going to get into some of what you've found today, and you have quite a number of what looked like detailed citations and whatnot. Now, I haven't had a chance to go through and check your primary work, but it's well cited. So thanks for doing the work. Thanks to those in the audience who supported the show this week and helped out with a bill or two this week. I really appreciate the donations for that. And anyway, we are live right now, it looks like. And so, Alana, welcome.
Thank you. And would you like me to just start talking about the books, or
well,
where do you want to start?
Why don't you start off by telling us a little about yourself, how you got into this mess, you know?
Yeah. Wow, I had no idea. No idea. Well, I spent 10 years researching for a fictional history or a historical fiction series I wrote about what's happened to America since John Kennedy's assassination. And that 10 years, I had many, many files. And one of them was chemtrails, and one of them was HAARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project up in Gakona, Alaska. Back in 1996, I picked up a copy just out of Nick Begich and Gene Manning's book, Angels Don't Play This Harp.
I have a copy.
Yes, I read it. And they, of course, Nick, you know, he cited everything. It's like chapter and verse in there. For the Gakona, Alaska installation that was not that far from where both of them lived. So when I was reading the book, I just gotten back from grad school at St. John's in New Mexico. And I was substitute teaching to pick up some cash. And I went to a high school which was near a very big military base near where I live, JBLM, the joint base of Fort Lewis and McCord Air Force Base. And I didn't realize it then, but subsequently I did. A lot of spouses of military personnel probably were substitute teaching, educational aides at the high schools in that north end of town. So during lunch in the faculty room, I pulled out my Angels Don't Play This Harp. I was looking at it, reading it when two male faculty sat down, and there was also a female sitting at the table who seemed to have her nose in her sandwich and never looked up once. And they said, "Hey, what's that you're reading?" So I proceeded to try to tell them something about what I was reading. And they got very interested. And that was about it. And then the next day, I was out raking leaves in my yard when a military helicopter came over my house and hovered for about 5 minutes. And I figured they put me on an XY coordinate. And ever since, it was after that that my phone began to click. And I call it the paranoid 90s. Because in the 90s, it just seemed that everything got you on a list. And certainly Nick's book was quite a shocker in 96. So after that, as I said, I had a couple of files, and I eventually ended up in England for a few years, did some work for Adam Parfrey at Farrell House, came back to the States, moved to New Mexico, and became very good friends with Clifford Carnicom, the independent scientist who really did the lion's share of work on collecting data from his HEPA filter and precipitation in northern New Mexico at the end of the 90s and the early 2000s. Clifford and I and a couple other people, his wife included, would go to breakfast, and Clifford and I would talk about his latest findings with his microscopes, and he was collecting the fibers that were falling from the sky. That was really the beginning, because he got a blood sample from me and a saliva sample, and we looked at both under his microscope. I had had a biology second major in college, so I was very interested when I saw some sort of entities eating, sucking out the iron from my red blood cells. And that's really what stuck in my mind. I realized Clifford was probably right. He surmised that if this was being distributed and delivered through the aerosols in the sky, then we all were subject to breathing in whatever was being distributed. And he really worked very hard on a shoestring budget for years, collecting data, analyzing it. He had worked for the DOD and the Bureau of Land Management. So he was a true blue scientist of scientific technique. And he was my first guide. And then when Adam Parfrey, I moved back to the Northwest, and Adam asked me if I thought I could write a book on chemtrails. I agreed to do so. And Clifford and I had long phone calls to go through particularly Bernard Eastland's HARP patent, 1987 patent, and deconstruct it for the reader so that they could understand that that patent alone, and there were a series of patents for HARP, that patent alone.
And you do have a lot of them listed in here, right?
Oh, yeah. That patent alone really spelled out how if you were going to ionize the atmosphere, in other words, sort of draw energy down from the ionosphere far above us down into our troposphere, then you would have to have a lot of particulate matter in the atmosphere, a lot more than the normal pollution was providing. So that really was the key to me of connecting the two. At that point, I'd had the two files separate, right? I had the chemtrails file, I had the HARP file. I didn't know they were connected. Oh yes, they're extremely connected. And so that's when I started there with Bernard Eastland's patent, and then went ahead and wrote that book, and I devoted chapter 8 to Clifford Carnicom's site, carnicominstitute.org, where he has over 100 papers that he's written. And I wanted to sort of just bring it down to the essence so that readers would understand what it was he had actually found. And since that chapter was written, he has isolated and analyzed the DNA of the Morgellons, which he has renamed the cross-domain bacteria. So that's where it all started for me. I'm as surprised as anyone, and actually quite happy that I've come back to science after many years of doing a lot of other interesting things. But the science now, as you know, is moving into quantum science and plasma physics, and these are really fascinating, because
I'm a little reluctant to believe a lot of the quantum physics stuff, and I've done some shows on that, but yeah.
Well, it is true that I can't remember who said it. I should memorize who it is. But he said that if you aren't deeply upset by quantum physics, then you obviously haven't understood it.
Well, here's the thing is actually there's no two quantum physicists that agree with each other, even on what it is and what they're looking at. A contradiction is always a lie or an error. If you can't even get two people to agree, but I had a guy on a number of years ago, back in 2011, who had researched all of this, a guy by the name of David Harriman, and he exposes much of quantum physics as extremely problematic and descending from problems originating from Kantian philosophy.
Kant.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh yeah. I've got a, yeah. If you know, I didn't mean to segue into this. We can, go into that another time.
It would never have occurred to me. I thought you were going to say Kierkegaard, but because in a way that's very, very apt, because I do feel that quantum physics really butts up against.
The goal is to get you to believe that you can't know any truth, and therefore you can't look up your, you know, trust your own five senses to look things up. So you better trust the experts to tell you what to think, you know. And it's
that's true.
Yeah, you know, and it's always the denial of truth and whatnot even existing, right? So that's, you know, it's anybody who claims truth doesn't exist. Well, how do you know that's true? You know,
well, I don't know if it means that or that, because I mean, I don't know quite if you're thinking of the Heisenberg principle, because that's a pretty much of a mind blower where you can't.
Yeah, that's actually, you know, well discussed in Harriman's research also, but he pretty well tears it apart. But you know, it's official. Physics these days, people aren't supposed to question it, but I think it's most of the quantum physics, maybe not necessarily quantum mechanics, but a lot of the quantum physics is, you know, gobbledygook. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah. I think it gets into trouble, or it gets us into trouble, actually, because it does butt up against metaphysics in a way. And as you know, metaphysics, whether you're talking philosophy or metaphysics or epistemology or whatever you're talking, now you're in a realm where there are no absolute right and wrong answers. Now it's a new, I wouldn't say it's not our five senses, as if it's not perception itself, but I think it, quantum physics, for me anyway, calls upon a whole new set of perception senses, and thinking, I would have to say, would be one of them. Now that may sound ridiculous to you, but I love what, you know, I'm a student of Rudolf Steiner, didn't you? Did you know that?
What about Rudolf Steiner?
I'm a student of his ideas, 35, 45 years.
Oh, really? Well, We should probably get back to the research, because I exposed him as being directly tied in to key people behind the origins of MK Ultra, including Albert Hofmann and the others working out of Brussels, Belgium, wherever the Sandoz laboratory was.
In Switzerland.
Yeah, in Switzerland. Steiner was working out of there, and he was actually guiding. They claim that he was actually guiding a lot of the early MK Ultra research, and that LSD was actually invented because of his suggestions.
That's hilarious.
Well, not really to me, if you want to consider how many, you know, millions of people's lives have been destroyed from that stuff. But you know,
well, I mean, it's hilarious because I'm sure it's not true at all.
What's not true?
Oh, what you just said about Steiner.
Oh, okay.
But we don't have to stay on that.
Right.
So how
is it not true? How would you say that? Mysticism is always the tool of tyrants. And, you know, we have the entire CIA using mysticism and all of these mystics to sell the whole agenda that I've exposed over the last 5 years. So
I think you're right.
That Steiner, one more mystic, would be, you know, in fact, it was Willis Harriman from SRI, Stanford Research Institute. Let me pull up his quote here. Just, I'm sorry, audience, for the segue here, but I just want to.
He's got to get me.
Let's see.
You mean Willis Harriman, H-A-R-M-O-N?
Yeah, yeah. So the story starts way back in 1935 with a group of followers of German mystic Rudolf Steiner, who lived in a village in southwest Germany. In 1935, a dark cloud was over Europe, so the members of this group set out very deliberately to synthesize chemicals which were like the natural vegetable substances, which they were well aware had been used in all the world's major religious traditions down through the centuries. By 1938, they had synthesized psilocybin, LSD, and about 30 other drugs. They had stopped to think about the consequences of letting all of this loose and decided against it. That's nonsense. Of course, the CIA let it loose. They decided that they were not sure what the negative effects of the drugs would be and that there just weren't wise things to do. That's, of course, nonsense. Years later, in 1943, when Europe was really in bad shape, they decided apparently that possible negative consequences were really nothing compared to the consequences of not doing this. Now, two members of the group, which lived in very tight religious community, were in the Sandoz Chemical Company. That's partly how this project came to be. One of them was chemist Dr. Albert Hofmann. He cooked up the newspaper story that everyone has heard now about the accidental ingestion of LSD and the realization of what properties were after an amazing bicycle ride home and visions and so on. This group quietly gave supplies to the chemical and a number of doctors around the world. Willis Harriman, and that's from Australian Radio, ABC Radio, 1977. And I have both the audio and book of that.
And you trust Willis Harriman.
Well, I know all of these. Well, I know Willis Harriman was CIA. That could be a misdirection, but it sure makes a lot of sense. Now, since we're already, I mean, if you want to segue into that, I could pull up my research database and go into Steiner too.
No, we have to tell the listeners what's going on is that I recommended we could talk about MKUltra as well today because I know a lot about MKUltra, but I was informed that I am speaking with the world expert on MKUltra. Now, he can't resist going after me in some way. I see how it goes here.
Well, you know, I just wanted to point that out. But let's see, Steiner, he was a big student of
Goethe.
Alistair, well, no, let's see.
Crowley? Oh, no.
Let's see. Well, Hofmann is there, possibly Alfred Still. Arthur Stoll, who was also at Sandoz. Let's see, but we have him shown as connected to LSD and the Nature Boys group, as well as Theosophy, Waldorf Education, a big student of Nietzsche, and so let's see, German mysticism, but you know, we could track it down. That's a whole other different direction, though, you know.
That is a different direction, but that's really interesting. Thanks for sharing that. All right, I'll get back to my topic.
All right.
We were saying that quantum physics is taking science in a new direction. We're turning away from Newton and Einstein, and we're heading in this direction that has to do with pretty much what I've sort of accidentally discovered. I mean, I'm not a physicist, and I mean, I know biology pretty well, but physics has been new to me, and it's been a tremendous opportunity for me to delve into very interesting stuff. And when I started looking into how HARP worked, I really felt like I was all thumbs. I couldn't make a good mental picture of how it was working. I couldn't see how this electron soup was coming down around the magnetic lines of force and the Birkeland currents and the Alvin waves and all this. I mean, this has been a huge learning experience for me. That's what I want to say. You're not looking at an expert. You're looking at someone who is on the trail and has a pretty decent thinking capacity. So after I wrote the book, then I was on Coast to Coast, and suddenly the gates opened and hundreds of people began to realize I was alive even, and come on my Facebook site, which I'd never done Facebook before then, but I really had to when I had a book. And I began to be on radio shows and speaking engagements, etc. I learned how to do PowerPoint presentation. All of this has been all the while studying, and I would say I'm pretty much a 24/7 obsessive. So I have been really, really cranking it, because the more I learn about this technology, the more I understand how dangerous it is for the entire global population. I know you said earlier, Jan, that we could talk about electromagnetic force, EMF, EM, and by the way, EMF are my initials. I think that might be some sort of some sort of destiny thing that I ended up in all of this. I can absolutely talk about that because that was the final piece. In fact, right now, what I'm thinking a lot about is the 5G that's going up in neighborhoods. And it would be bad anyway if it weren't for the fact that I had found out how these chemical trails are related to wireless technology, are related to our breathing, our lungs, our blood, our blood-brain barrier, how all of this is actually not accidental. This isn't just collateral damage from military programs. This is actually, in my opinion, intentional. As we are, as the gates are stormed of what humanity has been for millennia, if not millions of years, and in the push toward transhumanism. So I'd like to spend the rest of the time, if we can, going all the way from what the chemical trails are, what happens to them as they begin to filter down.
Sure. Give us a mental picture. How do they affect us? How does that lead to, in the end, you know, you can never go more than two or three steps from a Huxley to Julian Huxley's transhumanism.
Oh, it was? Really? It was his?
Yeah, he even coined the word transhumanism. Yeah.
All right. Right. Okay, so let's start with the weather, because most people, when they think of chemical trails, if they've at least graduated beyond thinking all this above us is natural and contrails from jets and is just water vapor that happens to hang around a long time, if you've graduated from that, then you probably still think it's all about weather engineering.
You know what? Let me interrupt you for a second, because what I want to do, Ilana, is I want to show the audience, and you won't be able to see it till later, but I want to show the audience a photo or a series of photos that I put together of the day I realized that chemtrails were real. This was in about 2007 in a town called Simi Valley, where I used to live, which is just north of L.A., and I walk outside, and so for the audience, this is what I see outside. And all of this crisscrossing, and not only that, I could see a number of airplanes going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I went inside, grabbed the camera, came out, and took this series of photos so the people could see this, you know, and just, you know, because it amazed myself. But and I watched these airplanes, and while they were spraying, other airplanes on the way into LAX flew over in pattern. There were some Southwest Airlines that were clearly marked. You could see them fly over and in pattern for Long Beach and LAX, no problem. But then there was three or four other planes going back and forth and back and forth, and they would go across the valley, turn, and come back. And then another time, about a year later, they were doing this, and I was outside seeing all of this, and I called the sheriff, and I reported it, and they had to send someone out to film it.
And you're showing it now?
I'm not showing the video from the sheriff's department. I did show the photograph, but now we're back to us here.
All
so,
right.
Yeah.
Good. Well, thank you for doing that, because I think the only reason that 20 years have been able to go by with this program straight out of what used to be called Project Cloverleaf is has gotten by the public is because we don't really perceive anymore. We don't depend on our perceptions. We've been mediaized. If we don't see it on television, if we don't see it in a news story, if we don't see it in a movie that is actually a documentary, we just don't believe what we're seeing anymore. I think that if people could wean themselves from waiting for the authority figures to tell them what's true, or better yet, kill their TV and never look at one again, then maybe they would have a chance to begin to perceive the world that is rapidly vanishing into what Ray Kurzweil, Mr. Singularity University, has promised us, that we will have a virtual world. And what I'm saying is that little did I know when I got into this chemtrails HAARP thing, that this is all connected to that and is totally about getting us ready, primed for a virtual wireless world. And it's gotten an awfully good start. I can't believe 20 years have gone by, but wait a minute. I myself, in the year 2005, for example, did I notice what was going on in the sky? Was I able to say to myself, hey, wait a minute, that's not the cloud cover I remember from my childhood, which reaches back further than a lot of people's. No, I wasn't. I was immersed in myself, immersed in what was important to me. I was going about my life. So I understand, I have compassion for people who are not seeing what is before their very eyes. And I wish I could just reach up there with a vial and grab a little bit of that and slap a lid on it and take it in to have it analyzed so that people would then believe. And I would need a PhD in plasma physics to do that too, probably. Then they would believe that, yeah, this is a chemical sky. This is not a water vapor sky. In fact, most of the clouds you see on any day, they are chemical clouds. They are plasma clouds, to be exact. They are not water vapor clouds with particulates in them. So that's kind of what I want to draw out. And I'll start with the weather, because the weather is obviously going very strange. And we've had a whole invention happen at the COP21, the conference that occurred in late 2015, after a sustainability conference that took place the month before. This is the COP21 is all about telling us that the problem is, the reason our weather is going wacko is because we're driving our cars too much. We have too much carbon going on.
Never mind, the planet is a carbon engine.
Exactly. You know? I mean, carbon is an essential for life.
It's absolutely ridiculous. You know,
it's just a big money making scam, and then it threw a lot of monkey wrenches into the people who should be able to think about this, who have training in perhaps meteorology or something or other. Nobody can think about it because there are the people, and I'm thinking here of a conference that happened a year and a half ago, people who think that global warming is a complete scam. And well, in a way it is. And in a way, there is a warming going on. So
when they spray in the sky and create it and do all of that and change the weather.
Well, the cloud cover itself, as we well know, not just from the work of the of William Cotton, a climatologist of years ago, he said that, you know, you create cirrus clouds and you have an incubation chamber. So it's incubative under here. The sun is blocked out. We're incubating, but we're incubating not under wet clouds, moisture, condensation, heavy clouds. We're operating under a cirrus cloud cover that is actually created plasma. And nobody knows what plasma is. They think it means what happens when you're blocking, you know, when your blood is the plasma in your blood. No, this plasma is actually the fourth state of matter. And that's the hot item in the science that is happening in the sky now. Very hot item. A lot of things that people are seeing and putting up on Facebook and places about weird clouds that are up there, double suns, whirling things. All of this has to do with the fact that our atmosphere, which is enclosed in the troposphere, our atmosphere has become sort of a cloud chamber. And in that cloud chamber, many experiments are going on. And yet it's all under the subterfuge of this idea of carbons in order to get money and global warming, climate change. And that's, it's just a huge, confusing mess. I totally agree. For all the people out there who don't know what to think, I can see why you feel that way. I myself am just following the track. one thing after another leads to another, and I'm making connections and I'm seeing patterns, and I'm able to, over the years now, 6 or 7, 8 years, I'm able to contextualize all the fragments that I'm seeing, fragments like GMOs. Well, what do GMOs have to do with it? Well, there's that aluminum resistant fertilizer. And of course, now Monsanto has been purchased by Bayer, and Bayer, like Bayer aspirin, and the whole big pharma is just 1,000% behind this. Weather derivatives are going off the charts. God, big fat cats are getting fatter and fatter, making money off of weather accidents, and you know, the most recent one in Santa Rosa. I mean, what the heck was that? That wasn't even weather. That was a fire. But it's connected as well to everything having to do with weaponizing planet Earth. So with the weather, let's just start really simply off the... Where are you, by the way? Are you in California?
I'm in California, yes.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Perfect. Because, of course, California is going into what? Year 6 of the drought? Year 7?
Well, you know, what they also don't say is we had, you know, 30 to 90 inches of rain, depending on where you were at this year as well.
Was that the flooding, or that was separate?
Well, that was the part of the flooding as well. But, you know, areas of Northern California got 90 inches of rain or more. You know, but
so was that on the coast or inland?
That was inland, on the coast, all over the place.
Okay.
You know, it was okay. it was a pretty ongoing torrential downpour. But you know, in this area, we had double our annual rainfall.
Was it able to be absorbed by the soil, or was it a runoff like flooding?
Well, I mean, you know, besides all the flooding you saw all over the news and stuff, you know, good question. You know, but it was more water than I've ever seen come down. That's or just about ever. I mean, it was a lot
that
of water.
Was that in the breadbasket? Was that the Central Valley?
Yeah, there was a lot of that up there, too, and up Sacramento area, but... you know, I had seen some weather modification stuff. You know, there was a power plant on the coast of Hawaii or Alaska, I forget, or Japan, I forget which, and it was giving off a cloud, and then these people had followed the storm from the power plant on the island to it going over the Pacific, becoming this massive storm system, and then dumping. But it had the satellite photos showed the origins at this power plant.
Right, that's the WSACs. I don't know if that's right. It's WSACs. Yes, and those are definitely used to shepherd and feed storm systems, for sure. They're not the whole cause, though. If I were to look at the number one cause, or let's just start with a weather system coming off of the South Pacific, like the Pineapple Express or something. You know, here it comes, and now you've got the Navy ships are out there on the water in the Pacific. Got merchant marine ships, and now they could have a WSAC on board where they're going to have to feed the system. It's not enough moisture, so that's true. But mostly that weather coming off of the South Pacific will come toward the coast, and then the next phase will be a laser. Well, say they want to bypass California, they want to take that moisture north. And then what they really want to do is tack that whole system, that wet system, onto the hump of the jet stream that is usually parked over Vancouver Island. And then they will take that east and south in order to develop tornado systems, floods, even hurricanes off the coast, as we saw when they were able this time. It was an amazing record. I think they parked 4 or 5 hurricanes off the coasts in the Atlantic. They'll first thing they'll do when that weather is coming off of the Pacific is they'll shoot a laser beam along the coast in order to make what's called a waveguide, and then that they'll be able to send that almost like a suctioning through radio frequency and pull that up as if it had a rope in it, pull it all the way up along the coast, bypassing California, maybe throwing a little bit Oregon's way, throwing a little bit my way. I'm in Washington State. And then tacking it onto that hump over Vancouver Island, and then heading it south and east. And I don't know if you remember, I was just looking at it today, but it wasn't that long ago that a very good video was done by an actual science guy who was looking at how far south the jet stream is now going. And he was trying to figure out why it was going. I mean, it's down almost to the equator, and actually going over the equator in small amounts. So that's very unusual. So this is all being engineered with lasers, with radio frequency, in order to engineer the weather. And, you know, engineering the weather shouldn't be all that surprising, given that even General MacArthur back at the end of World War II was promising people that we would have the weather engineered in no time at all. So that's a done deal. All the weather I see, I don't know about you, Jan, but all the weather I see, and here in the Pacific Northwest, it's very different from California. There's a lot of clouds here, not as much rain as it used to be, much less rain. So I see that it's all engineered.
Yeah. You know, every time I see these planes going over, and I've watched them now since that first one of the photo I showed earlier, I've seen them do it probably 100 times since then, but you always see this gray, you know, unlike contrails that used to dissipate when we were kids, and I'd go through and look at all my old photographs of Peru and stuff. There's none of this crap in the air. But what these, you know, they spray these things, and then they spread out, and they create this mucky gray cloud, and that just kind of lingers around, you know, and then, you know, creates some sort of foggy, hazy day, and definitely not at all like the, you know, like normal clouds and or normal contrails. And when I was a kid, you know, when I was 15, I had a student pilot's license. I don't remember contrails looking like that as a kid. None of that stuff, you know.
No. And the cloud cover itself, yeah, there is some SRM, solar radiation management, going on. Yes, I agree with that. Mostly when you see the trails being laid like those that you were talking about in the photo you showed, now you will see that over areas that are going to get heavy hit by a weather system. I can always tell when they're building a weather system here off the coast for my area of Western Washington. I'm on the west of the Cascades. The east has quite a different weather system.
Yeah, I've even seen them draw X's in the sky and stuff, you know,
yeah.
A front location or something.
Well, that would be a locator. Yeah, that would be a locator probably for satellite action. So there are more than one thing going on. I'm not saying that every single chemtrail laid from a jet, whether military or commercial, is going toward weather engineering. No, but they have to keep the sky ionized. Now let's talk about that for a moment. What is ionization? Well, when HAARP was running at full tilt back, that would be from the late 90s to 2013. So that's how long it ran. And they had a variety of experiments they were doing with the ionosphere. They had wanted the energy in the ionosphere. They know what's up there. It's called the ionosphere. It's filled with ions. It's filled with, yes, atoms, but the electrons can be popped off with heat. And so it's just pregnant with energy that they wanted down here in our troposphere. That goes way back. That goes back to the end of World War II. And in the 50s, what they were doing was they were, and you probably know this, they were blasting the Van Allen belts with hydrogen bombs. I mean, crazy stuff, crazy stuff. I mean, the ionosphere is a big bubble. And in fact, even HAARP, when it was running full tilt, was forcing heat up from the phased array antennas that were shooting radio waves and microwaves up there, and it would bubble out into space. I mean, what if it had popped? What was their plan? Well, there's no plan. That's simply, you know, let's see what happens. So it fortunately did not, but it has been very damaged, and it takes time for it to get better. And that may be one of the reasons they shut HAARP down in 2013. And then now the story is, I consider it a story, that the University of Alaska Fairbanks has taken charge of it to rent it out by the hour to various nice researchers who are doing very nice research, having nothing to do with the military, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it appears now, if I can believe my next advisor after Clifford Carnicom, was Billy Hayes. Now, Billy Hayes, for those who don't know, is called the HAARP man. He was the team leader on the HAARP project. He's a tower erector and doesn't like people to make jokes about that. So he has worked on 240 to 260 various installations around the world for a three-letter agency that will remain nameless through its defense contractors. And so Billy came along when I finished the Chemtrails, HAARP, and the Full Spectrum Dominant of Planet Earth. He came along after I was on Coast to Coast and became my sidekick all the way through the Space Fence book that I have just finished a year ago and will be out in January, called Under an Ionized Sky, From Chemtrails to Space Fence Lockdown. Billy is the one who has filled in the gaps of my lack of technical knowledge on all of this electromagnetic equipment for radiation, for radar units, NEXRADs, cell towers, Gwen towers, windmills or wind turbines, fracking wells, everything. I mean, Billy is the go-to guy for me. And he has been very patient with me. I've logged many, many hours as I'm going over. Because, you see, you can't write a book about something that you're not particularly an expert in unless you can make a really good mental picture and the connections with how it contextualizes with the rest of the technology that you know about. And that's what Billy really was able to help me with. So he was the one that pointed me in the direction of, yes, the space fence. But he says, because of the years that he spent on those towers being microwaved himself, he has tumors all the way through his body. And whenever they change the frequency of any of these units that he's worked on, believe it or not, he goes into grand mal seizures. So he said that when those four or five hurricanes were parked off the Atlantic a couple months ago, he said that they must have fired HAARP up to almost its full extent, because he got pulsed seriously by it when they were recalibrating it. And using it, I assume, to run four, I mean, basically, those were four hurricanes they were running off of the coast. That is not easy. Each one requires an ionospheric heater that will interfere with another beam. So it's two to three beams each hurricane would have to be maintained in order to park those babies. And they did not move. If you remember, the one off Houston did not move for 2 days. So I'm now in doubt. HAARP is back up. HAARP is only one unit, though. There's Arecibo, there's ISCAT, there's one at Brookhaven National Labs. These ionospheric heaters may not be as powerful as HAARP was, but it doesn't really matter. What really is the story in this digital era? We've gone from analog to digital. Digital means it's the pulsing that is the power. And on one pulse, say you know, I mean, for example, of a pulse, the Schumann resonance, 7.83 hertz, that's a pulse. That's a pulse. And we life forms on the planet for millions of years, I would imagine, have been resonating with that life pulse of the Schumann resonance. But now the whole Schumann cavity of our Earth is being messed with, right? The ionosphere is being messed with. At CERN, they're messing with the magnetosphere. I mean, think planetarily now. We're going from weather systems to the planet. And now we are resonant beings. And that's what makes us so wonderful, in my opinion, and flexible. We can adjust to many things. We can adjust to cold. We can adjust to heat. We can adjust to various latitudes. We can adjust to water and depth and space. And now we're going into space. But that resonance is also our fragility, because if you can have a technology that can pulse a certain frequency, or even several frequencies at once, because they can stack them on one pulse, then you may be vulnerable to that if it's being used as a weapon. And I do believe that is going on now, because our atmosphere is so thick with what these chemical trails and the rocket plumes from the sounding rockets that are going up. Recently, they've been going one every 2 weeks. I mean, boom, 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 up into near-Earth orbit. So the spewing out behind the rocket, the spewing behind the jet, which is either commercial or military at varying altitudes, this, what is in it? What's in that? Well, it's chemicals in that. And among the chemicals are aluminum oxide, titanium, barium, strontium, lithium, all of these things that most Americans haven't studied since they had to take science in high school. And these it's these conductive nanoscale metals that are laid in the stratosphere above our atmosphere, but now filter down. And why are they doing this? Is it to kill us? No, not at all. It's because they need the particulate matter in order to keep our atmosphere pregnant with ions, to keep it like an antenna, a 24/7 antenna, a 24/7 battery. This is what our atmosphere is now. And even in the summertime, I'll now hear someone say, gosh, it was so hot today. I felt like I was in a microwave oven. And I always want to say to them, that is the most apt metaphor you can possibly have, because that is exactly what we're living in now. We're living in a heat chamber. It's a cloud chamber that is a heat chamber. And so you see how with global warming, the words global warming, there is some truth to it, but it is not being caused by carbons at all. Not at all. It is being caused by military operations that demand a wireless capability for all of the, hundreds, thousands of operations that they are running now. And it basically all adds up to weaponizing planet Earth, just as I've thought for years that the military mind just can't look at anything without wondering how it could be weaponized, right? And we're there, and the next thing I want to talk about, if that's good, Jan, I want to go into what that means that we've breathed those metal particulates in.
Sure. So yeah, what does it do to our bodies, our immune system? Does it get past the blood-brain barrier? What's going on there?
to me, this is the key. I mean, when I first got involved in the movement and started meeting some of the other leaders, because it's a very horizontal movement, and truthfully, the whole movement seems to take place on the internet, which seems strange to me. But that's part of living in a virtual world, right? We're not having meetings. We're not flying all over the country with our briefcases talking to each other. We are on the internet. Trying to figure things out together and trying to draw the public in and give them good information. So when I first came into it, I guess I thought that, yeah, that's unfortunate that this Morgellons has fallen into our blood, because I saw it. I saw him eating.
How many people are known to have had that, do you know?
Well, here's what I know. If you develop the lesions, say you have a sore or sores here or in your scalp or in your genitals, wherever it is, they look sort of like craters and they separate and there'll be these little wires sticking out. Black, I think they're black, blue, and red. Black, blue, and white. And the color coding has to do with their genetic engineering, you know you have Morgellons because there it is. But on the other hand, say you then go to your physician. Well, up until recently, I don't know how it is right now. I haven't really checked into it lately. But originally, it was a delusional parasitosis was the diagnosis that your physician would give you, and he would send you down to the psych ward for a psychological workup. He wouldn't collect any of the detritus out of the wound. He wouldn't do anything. Wouldn't take a blood test, nothing. And it was almost to me as if either you've got massive ignorance and the DM, I think it's called the DSM-5 is the psychiatric manual now. And that's the manual that is used entirely for cover-ups. Whole diseases are made up and stuck in there for sure. Physicians who know next to nothing. Or these physicians know this is a federal operation, national security, and have been told to not engage at all. I don't know if either is true or if both are true and even more reasons. But anyway, that was the dilemma that people found themselves in. But according to Clifford, and after I saw my blood and my saliva workup, I would say that everyone has breathed it in. We all have the fibers. Because I now own a tiny microscope. I wanted to show you this, Jan. This little thing, wonderful, has an LED light and has a UV light. And $6 on the internet. $6. Everybody should own one of these babies. But of course, you know, if you don't want to really know about the tiny world, then you don't want to get one of these. But I can take this and go to a supermarket and just get close, turn on my LED and get close to the fruit, even in the organic section, and I will find the fibers. They are everywhere. So I assume everybody has them, but how many people get really sick from them? I think there's probably 1 million to 1.5 million in this country alone. But the shame and frustration, the doubt, the confusion. Of course, you know, who's going to talk? So that's completely a conjecture I picked up on the internet somewhere, so I don't really know. But I do know that I do know how to treat it to help. And the help, I'll just stick it in here now. It may sound very, because I don't have it. I have it in me, but I don't have any outbreaks or anything. I've been a health nut pretty much since I was 21. I'm 70 now. I know the immune system is challenged by this atmosphere that we must breathe from. And so you must, everybody must look at their lifestyle and make choices regarding their immune system. What serves it? What doesn't serve it? If something doesn't serve it, out. Because now one of the problems of the Morgellons genetic engineering, and it is genetically engineered. This is not a natural entity. Clifford calls it the cross-domain bacteria, the CDB, because it has elements of all three domains of this planet Earth in it. And there is no other creature that really has that. So it has been man-made, and therefore our immune system does not recognize it and will not go to bat for us. This is a huge problem. So that means that everything else that our immune system recognizes, we must support our immune system so that it can remain strong and not be overrun by what the Morgellons is building inside of us, because it is programmed to build. I think Elon Musk is the one who first said the words. It seems to be programmed to create a neural mesh. What?
Yeah, anyway. Mr. Transhumanism himself, you know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, he's the one who brought up the idea of the neural mesh as being, I don't know if you remember this, but he was saying, oh, yeah, I think I'm quoting him properly. He says, yes, you need this in order to defend your brain from the AI that's coming.
Right. The AI that he and the rest of them helped create and fund over at SRI. And
Exactly. So he's the one who brought the term neural mesh to the press. And I have seen this Morgellons, and it does create a web. It creates a web, not like a spider web, not a round with a hexagonal sort of shape. No, it's just a thatch like that. Yeah. And that's what it's doing in our bodies. So if we can maintain our immune system, then we can live a very happy life, because we have lots of parasites in us. This is not new. We have the kind that are real parasites, and then we have the kind that we cut a deal with, like in our back, you know, in our flora and fauna and our intestine. So I want to encourage people that this is not a death sentence, but people with the outbreaks are very busy in the chemtrails movement, figuring out how to live and what will help them not only control the Morgellons outbreaks, but really flush out the nanoparticles, the metal nanoparticles.
What is the effect that these have? I mean, do they cross into the blood-brain barrier, cross through it? What is the effect? Is there any scientific notable effect that, you know, people can show that they are, you know, I mean, what's the end game with this? I mean, are they trying to turn us, obviously, you know, the AI agenda would be like, you know, make us robots or whatever and chipped and all of that. But are they trying to turn us into living organic robots? Is that the agenda? What would you say?
Okay, so first let me answer that one that you said for proof. Now, I would recommend listening to Dr. Russell Blaylock. Dr. Blaylock has done some very good work on making a pretty irrefutable tie between the aluminum nanoparticles, which are the brunt of what we're breathing. That's the major element in the JP8 fuel as well, is aluminum oxide. There are other metals, of course, but the aluminum, he has tied the aluminum to Alzheimer's, no question. The next tying that's happening right now among various physicians, and as you know, Jan, 80 naturopathic health-oriented physicians have now been murdered or have died strange deaths.
I've seen some of that.
So a lot of them have been pursuing the relationship between vaccinations and autism. And the vaccinations, in my opinion, given that I cannot get the formulae, the same as I can't get the formulae for the JP-8 fuel either, because right. the military has classified it. And that's for commercial jets, too. It's a
well, you know, possible. And you see, like, autism and everything else going through the roof. The only thing that's changed other than the GMO foods is the vaccines, you know.
And the aluminum we're breathing from the trails. Right, yes.
Yeah, all of that all good of that. Stuff.
So there's very
and the good and part. The and the hot air coming from the I have a theory that the Governor Moonbeam here in California that he is causing the global warming with his hot air.
Jerry Brown. I remember Jerry Brown.
You know, this guy wants to build a rocket and shoot it through the atmosphere to study global warming, and never mind all the everything from the rocket and all of that. I mean, it's like so.
But that's his role in the American Governors Association. Yeah,
as a Jesuit and a member of Laurel Canyon and all of that good stuff, you know.
Yes, and really every governor who lasts ever since what was the name of that guy that had the show? The conspiracy show.
Jesse Ventura.
Every governor gets their marching orders from the American Governors Association, or they're not going to be governor anymore. So I don't take them seriously, and I certainly don't listen to them. But the second part of your question, now you need to remind me, because I went to the Russell Blair.
Well, just what's the end game? How is it affecting us? Right. You know, what's the story on that?
Okay. So yes, you were spot on in one way when you, I think you used even the word chipped, that this is a way to chip us. Now we have these nanoparticles in us. They're very highly conductive. And we were transceiver towers before, but now we're transceiver towers par excellence, enhanced, you might say, because we're filled with these tiny, tiny, tiny heavy metals.
So it's going to be like, instead of War of the Worlds, you know, Halloween 1930s style, which I exposed all that. I did all the primary research at Princeton. Now it'll be a internal War of the Worlds type of deal. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes. There's various ways to see how this will play out, but I would say that, given that I gave you the pulsing piece, that now that the atmosphere is pregnant 24/7 with conductive metals, very tiny scale. And given that we've got all the equipment set up, this is why I wrote the book about the space fence. We've got the radar installations. We've got the NEXRADs, those big golf ball looking things. We have ionospheric heaters, stationary and mobile. We have large ionospheric heaters, and we have small ones, briefcase size. I mean, the technology is everywhere. In our neighborhoods, we've had phased array antennas. We've had the power lines, the telephone poles, the smart meters, all of these things that now with the smart meter, this is, of course, a pulsing type of technology. And they say that, you know, they're only pulsing it a couple times a day or whatever. No, this is like Big Brother's babysitter on the front of people's houses. Yes, it is. It will keep track of the energy use in the house, and it has the capability of turning your energy use absolutely off if they are not pleased with you. But it also knows when you're home and when you're not home. It is in touch in communication with your Internet of Things, or your Internet of Everything, I think they're calling it now, your washing machine, your dishwasher, your television, your computers, all of those things. They're all yak.
Yeah, you know, and people think, you know, people just buy into the over convenience of everything. You know, it's like, you know, convenience is what's going to
it's done us in.
Kill us. Yeah.
It's done us in.
So
they didn't need the hammer and sickle from Russia. They just needed convenience and comfort.
Well, they did have the Esalen Institute and all of the military up in the Bay Area, you know, and all of the communists up there promoting that. I mean, you know, they did use the sickle and the hammer, too. You don't want to...
Soft.
You know, and the fist. I mean, you know, Bernie went around just shaking the fist like he was Stalin himself, you know. So, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, shake my fist and then we're going to finish our presentation and go murder 15 million people, you know.
Well, okay. So, so we have our neighborhoods are completely armed. And remember, whenever we are given a technology that we just love, like, you know, I remember reading from someone's article that we had all watched Star Trek back in the 60s and 70s. And
Listen to this, Elena. I was friends with George Clayton Johnson for 24, 25 years, who wrote episode one.
That's great. That's a claim to fame.
And now I see the whole agenda going on in there too. And now I'm like, geez, you know. Anyway.
Well, it's like when Captain Kirk would land on a planet or get transposed to the planet, he'd flip open that cool little cell phone, and you know,
your Motorola flip phone.
Everybody was dying to have one of those. And finally, you know, after they gave us, let's see now, first they gave us the TV, military did. Next they gave us the computer.
Well, don't forget FM radio, because we exposed that too.
Oh yeah, we had the FM radio.
Right.
And then after the computer, they gave us the cell phone. Oh, which, by the way, it requires lots of cell towers. And you won't be able to tell us not to put the cell tower where we want to, because you don't know this, but we need to have it in an exact geographic area so that we can pulse what we want, when we want it, to whom we want to pulse it to. So that was the hidden factor. That was the hidden clause that none of us were told. They also didn't tell us that our cell phones, I don't own one, by the way, I'm absolutely opposed to them. Our cell phones are able to not only eavesdrop on our conversations, even if it's off, but they can pulse us with moods. It has all sorts of moods, because your mood of sadness, your mood of enthusiasm, your mood of nostalgia.
Well, you know, what I wonder is these health track things that they have on them to monitor your pulse and all of this stuff, your breathing, how much exercise. You know, these are actually tracking your bio, print.
And it's being collected.
Right.
And it's being...
I can't believe people that sign up for those things and use them.
And this is really what... I don't know if you noticed this, but the data center in Utah that went up as the repository of all the CIA and NSA and DIA records or whatever, and God knows how many stories below the surface of the sand it has, that went up at the same time as all these fusion centers went up. Now, these fusion centers are where I think most of this data, particularly like you mentioned, the people who are jogging and everything's doing their muscle testing and their heart and their rate, and all of this data, much of this data is being sent through these fusion centers, and then it's diverted off to a variety of places where it is stored in the cloud or wherever. So let's just keep with this picture that our neighborhood.
We should just about wrap it up here too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That. Wow.
We're actually into the second hour. I usually end up, you know, around 1 hour, 15 minutes or so. So we're
okay. Great.
Yeah.
So our neighborhoods have been weaponized. We have been weaponized. We actually have the part of the weapon system is floating in our blood and easily slipping through the blood-brain barrier. So now everything in us can be remotely contacted, communicated with, programmed, no problem, because we are resonant beings. You see what I mean?
Yeah, interesting. I'm going to have to I'm going to have to dig through your primaries and see what all I find there, too. And, you know, have you, maybe I'll talk you into sending me a copy of the new book, get you to autograph it this time.
Okay.
But
yeah, I'm now writing the third book in the series, and this will be the last one because I will have said everything, and I'm hoping somebody else will be able to be much more expert than I in this. I'm only writing these books because no one else is. This one will be on synthetic biology, and I'm going to go deep into what we just finished with.
Excellent. All right. And Ilana, what is your website?
I have a blog site, and it is ilanafreeland.com. It is being made by a woman very generously giving me her time, who is now moving to Mexico because she's had it with living here. So I don't know what's going to happen to my little website. And then you can also, if you're a Facebook person, you can ask to join my closed Facebook site, Ilana Freeland, Chemtrails, Harp, and the Full Spectrum, where only the science and only the all the different parts of this technology are discussed. And I have had no trouble with trolls, I'm really happy to say.
Yet. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks
you so
for that.
Yeah. So they, you know, I mean, lately they, you know, when you learn how to spot them and expose them, after a while they kind of stop harassing you, because then it's just like, you know.
I'll just send them to you, Jan. I think you can handle them.
Man, I went through hell for 5 years from trolls. It's ridiculous. All right, Ilana, anything else you'd like to add? Anything that we missed that you can think of?
Oh, my gosh, that's such a big subject. I think we did pretty well, and it's been really fun being on your show.
All right, and I wanted to say thanks to Josie for donating a new microphone this week. I really appreciate that, and so I hope people like the new audio sound. Also, thanks to the donation that Nathan sent in earlier. Thanks to all you who support the show. See you next week. And thanks so much, Ilana. We'll talk to you again soon. Good night.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Bye.
See you next time.
Yeah.